Hey everyone, this is Emmanuel.
And this is Kyle.
Stay tuned for Off the Wall from Moldova. Chișinău, or...
Chișinău.
Chișinău. You know, I don't know how to pronounce this damn city. I'm sorry.
Gesundheit.
I feel like an idiot because I didn't do my research as to how... Well, here's the other thing. Our train ticket here, one of them spelled the city with a C, and the reservation for the sleeper spelled the city with a K, Russian spelling, apparently. So it's open to interpretation. You know what? I'll say Chișinău. I think that's the right way to say it. It's C-H-I-S, so Chișinău would be acceptable in my eyes, but Chișinău, I think, is how you're supposed to pronounce it. I don't know. We're in Moldova. We've had an awesome time here. This is the least visited European country there is. In fact, if you do certain statistics, it's the third least visited country in the world. I'm not quite sure how they arrived at that. It's also the poorest country in Europe. I'm saying these things like they're achievements to be proud of, and I think most people would probably take offense at that.
It's not necessarily by choice. There are circumstances that led to this. Obviously, maybe we'll get into that. But
well, it's really really confusing. If you look at the geography alone, oh my God! All right, I'm going to try. I don't want to focus on this too much. I'm going to try to explain how difficult it is to understand. Okay, so back in the Soviet days, there was a Soviet Republic, SSR, Soviet Socialist Republic, known as Moldavia. Okay, and that's what this is now, pretty much. It's now called Moldova, not Moldavia. But there was another Moldavian Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic, Moldavia ASSR, which is now a part of Ukraine. And to make it even more fun, back in Romania, where we just came from, there is a Moldavian province on the eastern part of that country. And I think if you refer to Moldavia, you're referring to that province, this whole country, and that part of Ukraine. It's all so incredibly complex.
I'm hearing four different Moldovas, two geographic, two historic.
Well, you know, it sort of makes sense because when we talk to the guy... who sold us the Club Mate in Bucharest, he said, oh, you're going to Moldova. You should go to the real Moldova, not the Romanian Moldova. And, of course, we were going to the real Moldova, which is where we are now.
To which he said, why?
Well, everyone says why. Not people back home, but people here say why. But, yeah, we were going to the real one, and that's where we are right now, is the country of Moldova. To the east of Romania. Look it up on a map. You'll see where we are. And, okay, so we basically had our two-person sleeper this time. There was no misunderstanding like there was last week when we were going from Hungary to Romania. However, the train car itself was a little bit challenging.
A little, I guess I would say, more DIY.
Yeah, very DIY.
Cozy. But also a little brusque. We basically were thrown some sheets.
Literally, thrown sheets.
There wasn't sort of any kind of AC, typical, you know, you'd get power on a lot of different modes of transportation these days. None of that. And we kind of just had to figure out how to put our beds together, and really the best option was to go to bed, knowing full well that there'd be a border check. We would have to wake up and present our documents.
Yeah, we looked at the train schedule, and we knew that at about 3 o'clock in the morning, we were going to have to cross over, leaving Romania, going into Moldova. And this would be a real border check, because unlike going from Hungary to Romania, which kind of surprised me, having a border check at all, this, we were leaving the EU for sure, and going into a former Soviet republic. So we were prepared for that, and, you know, we kind of figured out our bedding. Actually, you found pillows and a mattress a little bit later on that were stowed underneath the seats, so that made it a little bit more comfortable. But I got to tell you, the guy driving the train, I think it was his first time, because he would bring the thing to a stop so suddenly. One time, I had my head where it shouldn't be. I should have been in the other side. I wound up flying off the bed and smacking my head right into the table, which is separates the two seats by the window, and that wasn't pleasant at all. So it was kind of a rough beginning to a trip, but eventually we were able to settle down, and I was surprised because hours went by, because next thing I knew, we were being woken up by the border guards, and that was funny. That was really kind of crazy, because the first person who came in was this very imposing woman who didn't speak any English at all, and just basically indicated baggage or something, and we said, yeah, our bags were up there. She just kind of stared at us at that point. Gave us this hard stare, like, yeah, bags.
She didn't know how to follow up or, like, press us.
No, not at all. I didn't know what she wanted. Did she want us to get the bags? She didn't motion for us to do that. So, okay, then she basically walked away, and then the passport person came.
This is Romanian passport control verifying or stamping us out, or me, I guess, me.
Being an American.
Correct. Yeah. So he had to officiate our exit from EU and specifically Romania.
Yeah, and looked at my passport, and I guess I didn't. They didn't check anything for me, since I was a European passport. That person left. You know what? I might have this backwards. Was the baggage woman, was she on the Romanian side or was she on the Moldovan side? I don't remember.
No. I'm pretty sure she was the Romanian side, part of that initial sweep. But maybe the two customs checks were in between, and she came after the third person, which...
Yeah, that's why I think she might have been Moldovan. Let's say for now she's Moldovan.
Got it.
Okay, so we at first got woken up by the person who looked at our passport, took our passports, actually, for about 45 minutes. And it's really weird. If you've never done this, it's a very strange sensation to be sitting on a train that's not running. There's no engine. It's extremely quiet. Everybody is awake at this point, and you just know that you're being checked. Your passports have been taken from you, and for 45 minutes, you just sit there. You're not allowed to go to the bathroom. You can't do anything. You have to sit in your cabin, and the time goes by. And then the time finishes. They come back. They give you your passport, hopefully, and then you move on for another few hundred feet. Train stops again. The whole process repeats itself, and I think that's what happened here. The process repeated itself. The heavyset woman came and stared us down after asking about our baggage. Not unpleasant, just kind of like comical. Then the passport person came, and this passport person had a digital desk around their shoulder.
She had a whole partial, as you said, a kiosk hanging off of her chest.
It said gigahertz on the back.
Gigabyte. That was a laptop.
Gigabyte, was that what it was?
Yeah, it's a brand of laptop. They basically built their little custom station out of off-the-shelf parts. Gigabyte, sort of a discount. It's like Asus or, you know, one of those laptop vendors. So it was a little netbook with a card reader, and she had a place to... Well, she didn't use the kiosk to stamp. I guess that bears on her shoulders. She actually put the passports up against the wall and stamped them using the wall, like, horizontally, which I thought was funny. But she was very stern and didn't say much and, asked what our purposes were, business or pleasure, first time in...
No, she said pleasure, and this was shortly after I'd smacked my head on the table, and, like... Yeah, pleasure, for sure.
Your first lie.
Uh-huh.
The last thing she said was good luck, or good trip.
Good trip, something
good
like
trip.
That, yeah.
We have had a lot of good luck, but that's just, I think, another phrase that people use here.
So then, and the next thing that happened was, we're sitting there, we got our passports back from this person. She stamped mine, too, because even European passports get stamped when you're going into Moldova. So then this guy comes by It's kind of like, you know, the beginning of Green Acres, where everybody's like sort of ducking their head in and they're showing the credit underneath their names. It was kind of like that. This guy just sticks his head in. It's like, okay, who the hell is this guy?
He had gold teeth or like the gold vignettes, like the real Eastern, you know, dental work.
Very sociable, very friendly looking.
Super friendly.
Couldn't figure out, okay, who do you represent now?
He had a folder. He's just standing there.
So he basically, you know, we don't speak either language. We don't speak his language. He doesn't speak our language. But he just, at some point, says, doctor. Okay. You're sending a doctor to check on us to make sure we're okay? And you say, yeah, you know what? We're fine. I did kind of smack my head real hard, but I didn't feel like bringing that up.
It's nothing. A little light hemorrhage is nothing. It's really, that's par for the course in this part of the world.
So he sees we're okay, and
no problem.
No problem. Just kind of moves on to the next carrier.
Assured him, no, not us. Check somebody else. We're fine.
Then a minute goes by, and the imposing woman is back. The heavyset woman is standing there, staring at us with this expression like, yep, here I am again. You know what this is. And she just basically says, open bags. She had to go somewhere to get that phrase to tell us what to do. You'd think that, you know, that's your job, to be on a train of people going in and out of the country, that you'd know the phrase for open bags, but apparently so few people that speak English go to that country, she didn't have that phrase, but she had it now, and now that we knew what she wanted, okay, we went up, got our bags, brought them down, and, you know, she rifled through them a little bit.
It must be that there are so few people that do not speak Romanian or other local dialects that, yeah, the phrase just didn't come up in her daily course of work. So upon getting the correct phrasing, as soon as she said that, we, of course, offered our bags, allowed her to rifle through things. She looked at our various medications, asking specifically, you know, medications, drugs. She wanted to know about all that. But I think we passed muster. And
well, it was just something, there was something so funny in her expression when she came back. We just sort of both understood the humor. Like, yeah, here I am again. I'm back. Now I know what to ask for.
This time I'm going to get it right.
So, yeah, so we did all that, and we actually fell asleep again, which I was amazed by. We basically just slept the whole rest of the way.
And mind you, this is an incredible thing. We've done it before, but the bogies change.
Oh, yeah, that happened right afterwards.
They jacked the train up. It's incredible.
Because what happened was, the reason for that, Russia has tracks that are slightly wider than the rest of the world. So whenever you go into a country that used to be part of the Soviet Union or go into Russia, your train will have to be basically hoisted up in the air, and I guess for lack of a better phrase, the wheels underneath your train car have to be replaced with wheels that will fit the track of the country you are entering. And that whole process takes about an hour.
Yeah, the term of art is bogies, as far as we know. We're not exactly sure. It takes a long time. The jacks are very slow. But fortunately, the train was very short. It was only four cars. I'm not sure if they did them simultaneously or individually, but we were basically lulled back to sleep with the occasional banging and clanging of metal and things being detached and rolled away.
There was a lot of jolting, I'll tell you that. I was trying to go back to sleep, and every so often we just got hit hard by something. And, like I said, that process took about an hour, but eventually it was over. We were hoisted up in the air and then brought back down, and then we were sent on our way.
It's soothing if you allow it to be soothing.
Well, I tried to allow it. It was not easy. But, okay, so we fell asleep. We woke up. Next thing we knew, we were being told that we were almost in Chișinău, the capital of Moldova. And so we had to scramble to get all our stuff together. And before we knew it, we were here.
Yeah, we had, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes where, you know, we're basically ready to pick up our things and walk out, where you start seeing stuff on the outside of town, you know, the outskirts. And I was kind of amazed, you know, the things people were able to do in rural areas just outside of town, just with barely anything, you know, old windows and old things basically cobbled together, just the basics of what you need, a lot of cinder blocks, a lot of just improvised structures. One thing that was really interesting is I saw a quarry or someplace that was dealing with, like, rocks and cement or something like that. You know, typically they have a lot of tanks, a lot of conveyors, a lot of machinery. Well, all of their machinery was bright yellow, but it was all constructed out of containers. And I thought that was great. It was just this, again, just like a farmhouse or a residential place, but a factory. As much as they might be successful, as much as they might have good business, even their structures and machinery is made from recycled things, found objects, just basically the structures, the simplest things. As long as it functions as a covering or it functions as a tank of some kind, it's enough. It's enough to do the job. And really, I think that's a theme in a lot of parts of the world where they don't have the best, the top notch, the, you know, name brand. They make do. They come up with something that works. And that was a really interesting thing as we crept into this city. And another thing I noticed is it was foggy. It was a little spooky. It had an Eastern kind of quintessential mood to it. This sort of fog rolling over the hills and just this quiet as we lurched into the city.
Well, don't forget, we had just seen Murder on the Orient Express in Bucharest, so I think that was pretty much tantamount on our minds as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had our own intrigue and so on, but this was also a very, very old train. When we had made our way to Prague from Warsaw, we were on a very, very old train, and it had the hot water tanks built into the ends of the cars. This train had the same thing. It was very old. I would say 50s, 60s, 70s.
It had wood paneling inside. I thought that was amazing.
And crushed velvet seats with a cover over it, of course.
Little carpet, a throw rug on the floor.
Just a lot of detail you wouldn't get. A lot of modern transportation has materials and things that clean easily or that, you know, don't mar or are very durable. This was different. This was older. This was something that hadn't changed in a long time. Felt like you were in sort of an old luxury private car where you'd have wood paneling and teak and these kinds of details. But just the fixtures, the functional fixtures, like the hot water tanks for tea and coffee at the end of the car, felt very Eastern, very Russian, or Soviet, however you want to put it. But it reminded me a lot of that Polish train.
And this was a Moldovan train, so I guess it was made from the Soviet era. But, yeah, you did have that feeling. It's too bad we didn't make use of the teapots or whatever they offered.
Yeah, there was the ability for us to ask for those things. We didn't trouble our steward with it. He had an eye on us and was, you know, taking care of other things. We really wanted his help, you know, at the border and for those crucial things like where's the bathroom and all of that. But I'm sure he would have helped us if we wanted refreshments. But the rail, I think it was CFM or CRM Moldova. But it was definitely Moldovan. They had you know their National Rail logo and the like on everything, and it really was a unique brand to use on our way into the country.
So we arrived early in the morning. We seem to be doing this a lot lately. We leave late at night and we arrive early in the morning on these overnight trains.
It was 9:30. It was early.
Yeah, and you know what else? It was Christmas Day. Now, that threw us for a loop because, you know, we thought we'd already been through Christmas, but apparently in this part of the world, they have the Julian calendar, or they still celebrate Christmas based on that, and Easter as well. It's called Orthodox Christmas, and it happens a couple of weeks after. So we just happened to pull into town Sunday, the 7th of January, and that was Christmas Day. So we're coming into this this country, this city, in the midst of a holiday. We got off the train, and we couldn't figure out what to do. I mean, we knew the hotel we were staying at, which, by the way, cost a whopping $41 a night. We knew that it wasn't next to the station. We had a lot of trouble with Google Maps. Not really supporting all of the transit options.
Well, most of them were adjacent to the main stations. The Gary or Garetti, I think, is how it appeared on the map.
Most of the other cities, you mean?
Correct. Most other cities had stations connected. Chisinau Station is really centrally located, but there's no... All the transit options are adjacent.
Yeah.
And that, what that means is bus lines and other lines are out on a main street. The exception being taxis, which are there asking for your business.
Man.
Much in something we would recognize from Long Island or
yeah.
parts of New York.
Get off the train at Port Jefferson Station and you'll have all these guys walking up to you saying, taxi, taxi, taxi. And the exact same thing happening in Chisinau, where we got off the train and all these people saying, taxi. We don't want a damn taxi. We want to do this the way the locals do it. We want to ride a bus or, you know, if there's no train, maybe a tram. I don't know.
There's inherent risks in taking those offers. You don't exactly know who is accredited or what company is what. And we've read up on it, and it's really... You're taking a little bit more of a risk than you would be with the transportation that everybody else uses. And, boy, are there a lot of other... Man, there is electric buses and big long buses and old buses, and it's just incredible, the variety.
We kept running into the same taxi guy, too. He kept saying taxi, as if we would change our mind. We went into the train station, and he followed us in there, saying taxi. We walked up to one of the windows and you know, to ask about tickets and things like that. Then we had the bright idea to just get a cup of coffee, and we walked into this little coffee shop that was adjacent to the train station. That was a trip in and of itself. Now, keep in mind, this is a place where very few people speak English, and of course, we don't speak Romanian or Russian, which is what a lot of people speak here as well. So we just basically had to ask for coffee. And you, wise guy that you are, decided to get a beer at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I had this little tiny coffee that I finished in about 5 seconds, and you had a gigantic Chisinau beer in a bottle. So I'm trying to make conversation with the guy. There's nobody in the place. It's a little tiny kiosk with, like, one table. And so I, you know, he's staring at us. And I basically just say, you know, I point to myself and say, New York. And it's like, I might as well have said the second coming of Jesus Christ. The guy, like, practically fell on his knees. He was so enamored of us being from the States. I don't know if he liked the States or if he liked New York, but he was just—he literally was bowing down to us, saying he was shaking our hands, and you know, I just said I'm from New York, and you're from Seattle, and it was kind of spooky. You know, eventually I had to order a second cup of coffee because it was getting awkward, and I had nothing to drink, and he just was standing no more than 2 feet away from us, just staring at us while we're sitting at the table, waiting for you to finish that damn beer. And fortunately, we had gotten cash out of an ATM. You took 20 Moldovan lei, I believe that's what it's called, or was it 50?
50
out of an ATM, which turned out to be about $5.
Well, I think he was happy because I paid him about 30 or 40 lei for the beer and the coffee, and I'm pretty sure the beer was 14 lei, and the coffee could not have been the other 20.
It was good coffee.
But, you know, or the other 40 lei. And, you know, he was a little slow coming up with the change, and I kind of realized at a certain point, you know, Pops here might not have any change to give me beyond what he's given me. He might have given me everything he has.
Well, I think we might have been the only customers in there. Plus, he's playing all this religious music on the radio because it's Christmas Day, and so you got that going on. You have him, you know, basically seeing people that he's never seen before. I don't know when the last time somebody from the West ever came into that place.
We were aware of the difference. We were aware of the circumstance over exchange and so on. And you encouraged me wisely, I think, to just play along, let it go. Let's get through this. You
and
know,
finish your damn morning beer.
Well, it was a good beer.
It was a good beer. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I had a sip of it, but we really wanted to get to where we were staying so we could get rid of our bags and just sort of figure things out. And we had no idea how to do that still. We had some cash now. That was great, but we still didn't know. Google was being no help whatsoever, giving us, you know, telling us to walk or Uber or things like that, which we didn't want to do. So we went, made our way to where we saw buses. Still didn't have any idea what bus would take us to where we wanted to go. But I was able to find out through alternative methods that there was something called 171, which didn't correlate to any bus line. We started looking around at this street, watching what people were doing, and we saw all these white vans pulling up, and people just getting into these white vans, and then the white vans leaving. And I looked, and the white vans had numbers on them, and they had numbers of three digits. One of them was 171. We saw 171 come. We saw people get on, and we kind of took notes and figured out, okay, this is what they do. They open up the front door. They do something with the driver. Then they get in the back, and then the van takes off. If we can figure out how to do that, we might be able to actually get to where we're going. And we looked at our Maps app and figured how far we had to get to, and said, yeah, this is possible. We can do this if we have the money. And, you know, I think three lei was the fare. We just hand it to them, maybe say the name of the street we're going to, and we could conceivably pull this off.
Yeah, and we were in the frame of mind to accept the challenge. And as you said, the observation mode is crucial. We're so used to asking for help or getting the information or whatever it is and getting a sense of things. Sometimes that's harder. It's a lot easier to step back, observe what other people are doing, see how they just normally do things. We got to a point where we were watching people get on, observing. This is the 104. I think it was prior to the 171. We just took a van number and said, hey, how do they get on? How do they pay? How do they get change? And they would hand over a little bit of money, and then we would observe whether they got change or a ticket and exactly what that process was, so that we could basically emulate the same thing when our van number pulled up.
Which it did. 171 came by, and you led the way. You had the money, and we basically just got on. You said the name of the street. The guy nodded. You handed him, I think, 10, you know, because that way we didn't know how much exactly it was. We were told it was 3. Turned out that was right, and he gave you 4 and change.
Yeah, I may have done that. We may have actually had exact change at that point. It's not as important.
Yeah.
I think we wanted to overcompensate at worst. It's better to have overpaid and maybe be owed change. Again, you understand that rates, a couple lei here and there, that is literally 16, you know, barely any, you know, not even 50 cents.
So we got onto this van, and we basically managed to find seats. Actually, you stood up with the bags, and we went a short distance, and we actually got to where we were going. And we realized, wow, we figured the system out. We got into this tiny van. We made it to where we were staying. And the hotel actually let us check in earlier in the morning, so we were able to relax for a little bit. And then we asked them, is it possible to reserve a train ticket? Because the first thing you do when you arrive in the city is figure out how you're going to leave. We knew that we had to get back to Berlin by the time our train to London leaves, so we had to start figuring out how to do that. And it's really difficult in this city to communicate sometimes. So we, you know, if the hotel could be on our side on this, that would be very helpful. And we asked, okay, so, you know, I knew when the train was. The train to Kiev in Ukraine is only every other day. So I need to be able to get a ticket for that train. It's on odd days. And I knew there was one this day. Obviously, we don't want that one. But in 2 days, that's the one that we would like to get tickets for. They weren't able to actually reserve the ticket, but they were able to call the train station and tell us, yes, they're open. You should go down there sometime today and get the ticket because it might fill up. And if we missed that train, we'd have to wait another 2 days. And then we're starting to look at missing our connection in Berlin, which, you know, we really don't want to do. So we had to get directions on how to get back to the station. And this is where it's interesting, because the person at the hotel said to take a bus instead of one of those little white vans, and we didn't know about the buses. We had to go to a main street and basically look for one of the three routes that she told us about, and we saw one of those coming up.
Yeah, again, we just observed, you know, where is everybody getting on, and does this match the numbers that she suggested? And it's, you know, much in the same system. A little bit different, though. You don't hand money to the driver on a city bus. It's distinct.
You get onto the bus through the back doors. And I told you this, Carl. I said, because it reminded me of when I was in Russia, this is how it works. You get onto a bus, and we play a game. Spot the bus attendant, somebody who's sitting on the bus. As soon as the bus starts moving, will stand up and walk directly towards you and ask for money, because they know that you've just gotten on the bus and you should pay a fare. But you don't know who that person is until you actually sit down and the bus starts moving. So that's exactly what happened. We sat down, the bus started moving, and this woman got up and walked towards us. And the fare turned out to be even less than the white van. It turned out to be 2 lei, not 3 lei. And we worked it out. That turns out to be 12 cents each. That's what the bus fare is, 12 cents. And it was so simple. We got on the bus. We recognized where we were going. We saw the station. We got off. We went to the train station. We talked to them, said we wanted to get train tickets to Kiev. Fortunately, there was somebody there who spoke some English and was able to explain to us that, yeah, you know what, you're going to have to share with two other people. This is a compartment with four. And you know what? We've done it all different ways now. We've done it by ourselves. We've been forced into sharing with four other people and gotten very upset by that. We've been in an antiquated train car. Now we know we're going to be sharing with two strangers, but we can look forward to that, and it'll be fun. We're going to have a nice, well, maybe they're not looking forward to it, but, you know, we'll try and enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, just with regard to the buses, there is someone, as you said, that collects. They wear an apron, so you can tell. Once you've seen, you know, their uniform once, it's sort of an apron.
Once they stand up.
They keep a roll of tickets. It's basically just a piece of really thin tissue paper that's like a receipt. And they are, you know, an official. They're not just somebody asking for your money.
This is what I can't figure out. Yeah, they give you two little tickets on the thinnest paper imaginable, all right, and those are your tickets. But if you get on another bus, you have to pay another fare. There are no transfers. And, you know, at 6 cents a ticket, I don't expect any. So I'm wondering, what's the point of those tickets? The only person that is going to ask to see them is the person who just gave them to you. They don't mean anything to anybody else, so why even bother giving you a ticket in the first place?
It's true, yeah. Like I said, it seems like more of a receipt. And by this point, our confidence was up, we're getting some things done that really are important things. Another thing that helped us was GPS, just verifying where we're going. But by that time, you know, one or two trips on two different buses, we were feeling good. Wasn't as necessary to be, you know, plodding along, making sure the route is, you know, going to where you want to go. And, you know, gosh, by the time we went back to the station, it was sort of early evening, and they helped us basically book this four-person sleeper, and we were amazed. We were thrilled to have done it, because that was so crucial to, as you said, the timeline, which you can't forget. You can't forget about what you're doing, because if the infrequency is in such a way that it bumps you 2 days past another connection, it really messes you up, and you have to have that foresight. But thankfully, you know, after having done that, we felt really good about riding on our own, you know, making the right change,
well, you know,
and maybe exploring now that we had our connecting train.
What was really cool was going back to the hotel, because the woman at the hotel gave us all these directions, but you could tell that she was really worried that we were going to get hopelessly lost, because I'm sure she had told English speakers this before, you know, how to take a bus to the station and do all that. And we were back in like a half hour with our tickets, and she was amazed that we were able to pull that off. But hey, you know, when you're in New York, you learn things, so no big deal.
Yeah, you have to be calm. You have to be a little bit seasoned, and sort of anticipate that there's going to be difficulties, but also have confidence that the system is, you know, it's understandable. There's other people using it, and it may be a little bit different than what you're used to, but it's certainly not, you know, impossible to navigate. And, you know, we had, you know, enough experiences in other parts of the world to really pick up on it quickly. And I'm sure, you know, others who may have been trying to do the same thing but lacked a bit of confidence or experience may have really had it out and complained or you know, made a big problem of it. But, you know, it just, it actually works pretty logically if, you know, you kind of adjust and, as I said, observe, see how other people are getting along and get along yourself.
And people do help you. People will guide you to the right place and they'll see if you're having trouble. We've had nothing but good encounters with people here in Keesnow. And of course, being Christmas, too. Okay, so Sunday was Christmas. And you know what? Because Christmas fell on a Sunday this year, Monday was also Christmas. So we're walking around at night on Sunday, and there's all this festivity going on.
In front of the National Ballet, I believe Orange Telecom hosted a small stage and Christmas Village.
Orange Telecom, they're everywhere here.
Yeah, they the French really got in here and... Boy, they're holding it down. I don't see Verizon.
Well, and they have the Arc de Triomphe, too, which, you know, we're looking at right now. We see an orange building, but in front of the park is the Arc de Triomphe, which has been there a lot longer than orange, I'll tell you that. And it's a real Arc de Triomphe, too. It's not as big as the one in Pyongyang, but it's legitimate, and they have all kinds of cool structures and things. And the other night, it was just filled with kids and adults and festive lights and Santa Clauses and snowmen and things. There's no snow here, unlike back home, but it was a little chilly and just a very cool atmosphere.
Yeah, you're right. That was actually Monday. We ventured out, did a whole bunch of cultural stuff, trying to find coffee, trying to do those kinds of things during the day. Had an extraordinary meal, trying some of the renowned wines. This particular brand called Purcari, and then after that we went to a larger Christmas market. This is on Christmas Day. We got two full days of Christmas.
Wait, which Christmas Day? There are two Christmas days. In fact, we've been through three Christmas days. We flew on December 25th, okay? So we kind of missed that one, but we somehow wound up here on January 7th, and that was Christmas Day, but it was Sunday, so it didn't count. January 8th, Monday, was the day all the kids got off from school and everybody was wandering around and going on rides and seeing Santa Claus play the trumpet and whatever else is traditional here.
Yeah, Sunday we just stayed out a little bit later so that we could you know, just walk up and down the block, and we just stumbled into the National Ballet's Christmas Fever. But it was yesterday that after going to a really cool place called Propaganda Cafe. Yes. We were able to just basically walk down the street, and it was behind one of the main government buildings, and it was an even bigger Christmas Village with an ice skating rink, and I swear, you know, everybody in town was there. It was just so busy. People were so thrilled. Of course, kids probably having woken up to presents and all the sort of festivities that come with Christmas.
This is the highlight of the year for them. You can tell. You can see it in their eyes. And we notice this also in Bucharest, in Romania, that kids are thrilled by what we would consider to be simple things. Literally, and you know, people make jokes about this, literally they're walking down the street playing ball in a cup. All right, if you don't know what ball in the cup is, look it up. But it's the most simple game of ball. But they're having a blast doing this. And not just one or two kids, dozens of them. They don't need their video games. They don't need all this you know, expensive stuff. They're amused by the simplest things, like I was growing up. And it's just really cool to see that. On that, look how old that bus is. Oh, my God. That's incredible. some of the mass transit here is really something to see.
Yeah, that's an articulated bus. And the accordion part looks like the bellows on an old frame camera that's, like, you know, falling apart. But, you know, it's point A to point B. It's really, you know, a relic, but it's also, it's electrified, you know, and that's good in a city. Those could easily be diesel buses.
Yeah, some of these are go back to the Soviet era. Some of them are new and even have EU logos on the back, because Moldova actually is pushing to become part of the EU, and I think it would do them so much good to do that, because, as I mentioned, they are the poorest country in Europe, but they could use an influx of cash, they could use an influx of visitors. It's clear that they have spirit, and they really want to become part of the modern world. But I just want to speak to a point you made, Kyle, about wine. They are also one of the biggest producers of wine in Europe. People don't know this. 90% of their wine, however, was exported to Russia until 2006, when there was a diplomatic spat and Russia stopped importing that, and that was devastating to their economy. So the wine they have here is really incredible. We've had some of it, but they try so hard. They really obviously have talent and skill and deserve to be recognized and celebrated, and I hope that day comes.
Yeah, we've tried our best to support that industry, just trying stuff, and, you know, you have to realize that their most expensive wine is, like, something like $30.
Yeah, that's the other thing. God, prices here, oh, my God. Like we mentioned, a bus ride is 6 cents. But, you know, meals are more expensive. Like, we had a really nice meal last night, and I said to you, Kyle, that was 400 bus rides we just ate. Because, okay, you know, even pricing it out like that, it's still cheap. I mean, you're still talking about, you know, maybe $30 for two people with a lot of food and wine and all kinds of things like that. But the transit is most definitely subsidized quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's that sort of intersection, that cross between bits of new and, you know, yearning for development and fashion even, I notice. Those things are important just as they are in other parts of the world. And, you know, kids, they want to have fun. They you know, are amused and entertained by things maybe, you know, American kids would scoff at. But at the same time, you know, we just saw kids getting off the bus. They're, you know, contacting their parents on their smartphones. And, you know, these are little kids just basically, you know, like any other kid in New York, you know, traveling from to and from school on their own in the big city. And, you know, coordinating with technology. And, yeah, I said fashion, but fashion's important. People want to dress nice. They want to have nice things. When we were at the Christmas market, those little things like horse rides and funny things, they might be trivial. They might be a little thing in other parts of the world, but it means a lot because all of that is culture and identity. And I just really hope that there's more outside help and also interfacing with a country like this, because the people here definitely want to be, you know, a part of the world and modern and you know, develop their identity. And there's room for growth. There need to be more coffee shops. There need to be more more of these kind of cool businesses and kind of modern things alongside the older stuff.
The conversations you get into in those coffee shops, too, are priceless, because people are so curious about where we're from, and we're curious about what goes on here. But, you know, that curiosity, people stare at you, and we get that a lot. Just getting on a bus, people will just stare right at, because we look unusual. We're very different. There's nobody like us in this town. We might be the only Americans here for all we know. And kids, too, no exception there. But in the few minutes we have left, and we're running out of time because we just have so much to talk about.
There's here. So much.
And Moldova is really an interesting place, and we definitely recommend it.
We can't possibly encapsulate it in an hour. I mean, we're just overwhelmed by the experience.
We just happened to stumble in here on Christmas, and we also happened to stumble into a church on Monday night. And, wow, what an experience that was. There was a service going on. Very different from the Catholic Church you might be used to. This is Eastern Orthodox, and you just basically had you understood it more than I did. You had three guys dressed in white, three guys dressed in black, and they were kind of wandering around blessing everything. But I was mostly amazed by the people who were there. You had all these women in kerchiefs, some of whom were bent over, like, you know, out of Monty Python or something, you know, 4 feet tall and bowing down to the ground over and over again. Obviously, this means the world to them. The music was simply stirring, like, you would not, I can't even describe it. Just being there, it was just such an honor to see all that happening and to see that culture right in front of me. And you wouldn't even have known it was there if you hadn't opened up that door and gone in.
Yeah, it was hard to tell if it was like towards the end of one service or a multi-part longer service or something that's just sort of a constant tantric service that never ends.
I think it's still going on. I mean, we walked in there, it was in the middle of it, and it was still going on when we left, and we were there for a while.
Yeah, it was the top of the hour. It went five, you know, it was just about six, and they were not letting up, not for a thing. So, but yeah, they basically, they had incense and were blessing all of us, making the rounds around the room, and everything. Just as we experienced when we went to visit the monks of Newskeet, everything was sung. Everything was a chant, and the choir was in synchronization with the priests, and the priests themselves had altar servers or acolytes around them who were there to hand off the candles.
Those
or
the guys dressed in black.
Well, yeah, sort of more subdued, the darker sort of a monk robe. But they're essentially acolytes who support the priests and I guess assistants to the priests, deacons or understudies, as it were. But they are handed off the candles or handed off incense and basically facilitate all of the transitions from one part to the next part, opening and closing doors, moving furniture. It's really a very active ceremony we walked into.
And just to see how much that meant to the people there in attendance, that was so moving right there, to see the expression in their faces and to know that this was hugely important to them. That was something I'll never forget. But hey, we have to move on. We're leaving tonight for Kiev. It's really the only way back. We have to go through a country that's technically in the middle of a war. Well, not technically. They really are in the middle of a war with Russia. And this is going to be interesting, too, because our train is actually going to Moscow. So the people we're bunking with might very well be Russian going through Ukraine. So we have to be kind of careful as to anything we talk about. We'll have to see what that's all about.
It's probably just as well. I was going to get into things like energy, which, of course, Ukraine and Russia have a say in, and even the Transnistria region and where power and things happen as far as,
yeah,
you know, what makes Moldova tick.
Now that's too controversial. Let's try to keep it to... Well, not politics. Let's not talk about politics. Let's talk about religion. No, not religion. God damn it.
Yeah, breathing air.
Sports. No, we can't talk about sports here. Well, we'll just talk about the weather.
Not choking.
But not climate change.
Particulates and having a heart attack. Totally neutral topic.
Let's just go to bed and everybody doesn't talk to each other. We'll report back.
Good night.
Good night from Moldova. Ferata, bin karam ya bada, aim rakati shama, shitai kulka, adama kuti nelur, suterna se elbun, kaya shama kumata, royam, doarte spun. Fata, kai luma lasa, tempo in kasa,
am uitat și acel serut pe buze eu l-am păstrat. Te rog, ia-mă la tine acolo să trăiesc, nu pentru că n-am unde, ci pentru că iubesc. casa e és tu, tu fata. Care numa laça, centro em casa e és tu.
Кишиневе 11 часов вечера.
Радио, которое поет.
Санта новости.
Mai este timp până vom simți mirosul cozonacilor de Crăciun, dar comercianții au simțit deja aroma vânzărilor de sărbători, așa că au umplut rafturile cu decorațiuni. Pentru cei care vor să fie în tendințe, alegerea este simplă. Auriul și roșul sunt culorile care nu trebuie să lipsească din casă în această iarnă. Pentru cei sofisticați, designerii au o altă propunere, bradul violet. O lună și jumătate înainte de sărbători, comercianții au scos deja din depozite brazii artificiali și decorațiunile. În magazinele de decorațiuni este deja agitație mare. Dacă anii trecuți a fost negru la putere, acum trebuie să scoatem în evidență podoabele roșii brodate cu auriu. Dar nu toate tendințele stabilesc cum va arăta bradul de Crăciun. Prețul are și el partea lui. Cum este normal, suma crește odată cu pretențiile. Globurile din sticlă și podoabele lucrate manual nu sunt făcute pentru orice portofel. Un singur glob poate costa chiar și 120 de lei. Până la Crăciun avem timp suficient ca să le admirăm pe toate. Cele mai proaspete știri au fost aduse direct din Laponia de către șoferii Daxi Taxi, partener oficial Yandex Taxi.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
Вдвоем, даже за руки в прошлом году.